Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and that can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Dr. Kirby Surprise, and if you have a question, comment, if you'd like to talk to our guest. Toll-free number is 888-627-6008, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, Fran, and I would like to have a belated condolences to the Gibb family. I don't know if we got a chance to mention, you know, that last week. And I did you read the same thing that I did, that there's another case of somebody, gravely ill, and then, before his passing, made somewhat of a rebound, and it leads the family members to believe that there's something going on there, and isn't that what happened?
Right, that was back on April 23rd. He had already been in a coma for a few weeks, and his family had been standing vigil at his bedside during that entire time, the doctor leading them all to believe that this was the end and he was going to pass. So it was to their surprise when he suddenly came out of the coma and started speaking to them as if he was just fine. Of course, we see that as commonplace in people who are getting ready to cross over. There's that one last visit back into the physical world where they have the opportunity to tell everybody that they love them and miss them and that, they're leaving. But, of course, here the doctor was very sure to tell them that, this was Gibbs's iron will that got him to do this.
Yeah, it sure does seem as if we straddle two worlds, at the end. I also wanted to mention, many people may not be familiar with the afterlife discussion groups that we have across the country, and Fran and I facilitate one of these groups in New York, and we do occasionally, we get to do little experiments. Now, a number of years back, we did a big remote viewing experiment that we sent out to the whole membership, and I had talked to the group about it, and they expressed some interest in our little group of doing it, and we're going to do one in June. So if anybody would like to participate in this remote viewing exercise, and by the way, remote viewing, for those of you that are not familiar with it, people are able to get information about distant targets as if their consciousness was moving somewhere, and report back, and it seems to transcend time and space, and quite a number of people are able to do it, and they don't realize it. So we're going to hold an experiment, which is going to take place three consecutive nights, June 19th, 20th, and the 21st. It's Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And it's only for 15 minutes each night from 9 to 9:15 p.m. So if you'd like more information about it and you'd like to participate, just send an email to experiment@foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and we'll send you all the details. Getting back to the afterlife discussion groups, in case you're wondering what they are, Fran, maybe you could give us a little rundown?
They are wonderful little groups of people all over the country that get together and talk about any and all aspects of an afterlife. The reason for setting them up is, and I'm sure many listeners have experienced this, when you've had a sign or a visit or some sort of an experience that cannot be explained in our physical terms, you want to share it with someone. And, you go to your best friend and you tell the story and then they look at you like you have two heads. So we've got these great little groups coming up all over the place where people of like mind get together and they talk about all of these things in a very safe environment.
Yeah.
So, you know...
And it's not only for sharing experiences, but people may be interested to learn about different phenomena they heard about, like what's a near-death experience, what's a deathbed vision, what's an out-of-body experience, what's telepathy, what's ghosts and apparitions, what are the signs mean. So, these are forums where people, we learn from each other. So what happens is that if you're interested in a group in your area, there's a form on the website on foreverfamilyfoundation.org. You just fill it out. When we have a sufficient number of people in one geographical area in the country, and that's usually between 10 and 20 people, we seek out a moderator. Perhaps somebody out there would like to moderate their own group. And then we hold these groups, and we usually hold them four times per year. Some groups like to meet more often. And what happens is that when the groups get going, we try to bring events to that area, whether it be lectures or medium events. That's a good way to get involved, and it's a good way to learn and share. It's really been the backbone of Forever Family Foundation. So I would encourage all those that think they might be interested to send that email to or go to the website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, fill out the Afterlife Discussion Group request, which is basically a short form, and then the director of the groups will get in touch with you. Right now, we are... what happens very often in these groups is that they sort of take on a life of their own, don't they? I mean,
and each one's different.
Some are interested in some more of the science and some more of the experience.
Well, it depends on the group of people that are there.
Yeah.
And groups can segment off each other, too, and some groups actually come together and make for a different group. So we've seen that kind of metamorphosis take place. But again, we provide them with whatever they want. They want movies, we give them videos. They want to explore orbs, we put them on orbs. They want to explore physical mediumship, we have information on it. So we give them all of the information that they need to conduct some sort of a discussion on it. And, of course, we have a huge library of books that we lend out. And if anybody's listening and says, wow, I'd like to start a group like that, you're not, we will also train you to be a facilitator.
Right, and of course, like many of our core services, it's free of charge. Nobody pays. And I also want to make it clear, these are not therapy groups. If those that are in need of therapy because they're in grief should be seeking other sources or professional help. So with that, I think we're going to take a break because we're going to be having our guest on very shortly. Our guest wrote a book about synchronicity and coincidence. His name is Dr. Kirby Surprise. So stay with us. When we come back, we're going to hear more about things that remain unseen, so stay tuned.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Kirby Surprise. Our sponsor is the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Bob?
And our guest, Dr. Kirby Surprise, he worked for 14 years as a social worker in impoverished areas before returning to graduate school. Received his master's degree from John F. Kennedy University and later his doctorate in counseling psychology from the Institute for Integral Studies in San Francisco. He currently works as a licensed psychologist in an advanced outpatient program for the state of California. And he's the author of the book Synchronicity, The Art of Coincidence, Choice, and Unlocking Your Mind. Welcome, Dr. Surprise.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being here. So I came upon your book, and I saw the title, which was intriguing, and then I looked at the author's name, and it said, you know, Dr. Surprise, and I said, that's probably a name that the publisher made up. So I guess I was wrong.
No, it's my actual family name.
Okay. And how many times have you heard people questioning that?
Let's see. How many days have I been around so far?
Yeah, I can imagine. I guess a good place to start when we're talking about a book about synchronicity is can you define the term?
Yeah, synchronicity or synchronistic events are those meaningful coincidences that happen around us that seem to provide us some information. They often seem to violate the way we understand reality works. They're sort of like, you know, you're reading a book and at the same time you read a line in the book, a TV or radio says the same line, or you're thinking about someone you haven't seen in 10 years, and you turn a corner, there they are. Things like that.
So synchronicity, I mean, have you reached a real conclusion? I mean, do you think it's something that we create, or do you think that it's created for us? I mean, where does it start?
Well, I think most definitely it's a mirroring phenomenon. We're seeing our own thoughts and feelings reflected in the environment around us. It's a very sort of direct reflection. For instance, the problem with it is that until this book was written, until we understood more of the physics and actual psychology of it, it seemed quite impossible, you know, that we would be affecting the environment. But it's such a direct mirror that it will mirror any thoughts you have about it. So, for instance, your particular philosophical or religious belief, and you look out into the environment, those beliefs will be mirrored back to you as well.
These thoughts emanate from our mind, and they go out to the universe, and then there's some sort of an alignment. I know you mentioned they're mirrored, but is it a mirroring, or is it more of an alignment that takes place?
Well, let me go a roundabout way. Let me describe first to you a situation that we're all in right now.
Okay.
Very interesting. Right. I study neuropsychology. Here's your situation right now. The room you're sitting in, the environment you're looking at, is not objective reality. You're actually looking at a complex hallucination. You have billions of sensory neurons that are pointed out into the environment. Each one of them is a small digital computer. It operates on on-off, and it's sending digital signals to the universe's largest known supercomputer, which is the brain in your head. Your brain has such vast processing power, it's got the equivalent of 100 billion laptop computers inside your head right now. And what it does is it takes these trillions of bits of information, digital information, a data stream, from your senses, and it assembles in memory a neurological representation of what the outside world is like. Now, us, the part that we think of as conscious, is actually about the size of a walnut on the very front tip of the brain, the frontal lobe. You, in that front tip, have no direct contact with outside reality. Everything you understand about the outside world is fed to you on massive bundles of neurons that transmit this data stream to you. Now, the wonderful thing about the brain is that it doesn't just build a representation of the reality for you, it also changes it considerably in your service. There are billions of times more information, more patterns in the environment than you could ever be comfortable with. What your brain does first is it deletes most of your sensory information as irrelevant. You know, otherwise, you'd be overwhelmed. It shows you the things that it believes, based on where you've put your attention, are important to you. One part of synchronicity is the brain itself is scanning the environment for patterns. Our evolutionary niche is we're pattern matchers. That's what our brain does. We're not fast, strong, and don't have sharp teeth, but we look for patterns. Your brain also completes incomplete patterns for you. We have the knack of seeing through camouflage of other creatures. Sometimes, when synchronistic events occur, what's happening is the brain is highlighting patterns in the environment that were always there, but which it didn't think were important enough to show you until some interest of yours or some emotional experience told it that you found this information important. So it tries to highlight what you need in the environment for you. In addition to that, this is an amazing factor that you actually do change the outside environment by about 3 to 6%. This research has been known since back in the 1930s. Now, the problem has always been that it sounds really ridiculous and grandiose to say, well, one individual person can seem to change the universe on the outside, because these synchronistic events would seem to take vast amounts of energy to arrange. Think about it. You're driving down the street in your car, and you're thinking some particular thought, and you see a billboard that has the answer to your question, or somebody on the radio in your dashboard seems to repeat something you just thought. How would you possibly do that? Well, sometimes people go off on long tangents explaining, well, it must be angels or aliens or technology or some vastly important thing that enables that phenomenon to happen. Well, what we now understand is that we are living in a multiverse. It used to be a joke to say that Elvis was performing on a stage in Vegas in the universe next door. Well, that's actually now the standard of modern physics. We now understand that we're living in an infinite amount of parallel universes. Each one is slightly different. The thing that solves the synchronicity problem is that we, as multidimensional beings, and I understand your program is particularly interested in non-physical realities, we have the ability, we travel in these probabilities all the time. For instance, in astronomy, we say distances are measured in time. We say light years. Well, we're traveling in time, speed of light. We also travel in probability. Our travel in probability is directed by our thoughts, our emotions, and the focus of our intention. So instead of thinking of synchronicity as changing the randomness of the environment, what's happening is you are maneuvering yourself in these other dimensions that science is now telling us exist right alongside of us.
So let me give you a personal story, and I really appreciate your comments because it's something that I battled with. We had a friend we thought unnecessarily attributed everything to synchronicity, and we thought he was going overboard. And it was our belief that, you know, although some things were synchronistic, it was a mistake to think that everything was. So we happened to be leaving on a trip, and we're sitting in an airport lounge, and we said, all right, let's set up our own experiment. I said, I'm just going to think of an image, and then we're gonna see what happens after we describe what the image is. So I say our image for the week is going to be a horse. So let's see how many times a synchronistic thing happens with a horse. And, of course, then, you know, our plane's ready to leave. We go on the plane. I pick up the newspaper, and on the front page is, you know, a picture of a horse. And over the next 48 hours, there were probably no less than 35 or 40 different things that we noticed because we were paying attention having to do with a horse. So then you started, you know, in our minds we're saying, okay, this is there's nothing to this synchronicity because it's just a matter of paying attention. But then on the other hand, the fact that we were focusing on that, perhaps we set those patterns in place. So, I mean, how would you describe what we experienced?
Well, you're experiencing, you're looking in the mirror. Okay, our thoughts and feelings do get mirrored back to us in the environment very directly. Now, the amazing thing about this is we seem to be multidimensional creatures. You know, even though our conscious awareness is focused in the physical world, we do have the ability to see parts of ourselves in the environment as well. So I would say two things were happening for you. The first was that since you were interested in horses, your brain started to show you all the instances of horses that you wouldn't normally remember anyway. So memory operates on a thing we call emotional valence. It's like a charge. If something isn't emotionally important, you never process it from short-term into long-term memory. So you're probably going through your environment, you know, seeing horses constantly anyway because they're very prevalent around us, you know, the images. But you never remember any of it unless you're actually looking for it.
Right.
The other part is, though, you actually do tweak your environment. You change the randomness of the events around you. Would you mind if I give you sort of the scientific background?
Sure.
Okay.
Please do.
So, for instance, when I was studying experimental design, the best experiments in science are designed called a double-blind experiment.
Right.
In a double-blind experiment, neither the subject nor the person doing the hands-on research knows what the designer of the research was looking for. Now, they're both blind. They're double-blind.
Right.
The reason we do this is because we've known for a very long time that the act of observing an experiment, when you're looking for something, changes the outcome. Not that you're cheating or that you're misrecording data or you're using judgment calls. The act of observing the experiment actually changes the outcome. And this is standard science for a very long time.
Yep.
Now, there was a guy named J.B. Rhine back in the 1930s. He was a psychologist at Duke University. And he had a really interesting thing happen. The guy walked into his office and said, Doc, I'm a gambler. and I'm making a living throwing dice, and I can make the dice come up in my favor a little bit more often than random. So, you know, being a real scientist instead of throwing the guy out of his office, Ryan says, okay, let's break out 6 pairs of dice in a notebook and do 100 dice tosses. I want to see the number 6 come up more often than random. I'll record them. And sure enough, the guy went through his run of dice tosses, and the guy was about 6% above normal probability, making the number 6 come up as he wanted it to. So Ryan became obsessed with this. He opened up an institute, in fact, and did this for about 40 years, studied this. And he found that people have this ability to change the randomness of events around them. Now, he isolated the dice and did all the obvious things and determined there was no physical force involved. He also did things like pit gamblers against preachers to find out if there was a moral or spiritual component. He found out no person's moral character or their beliefs have nothing to do with the ability. Universal. He also did things like he tried giving people caffeine. He found that stimulants increased the ability to do this. So something about the brain chemistry. Now, what caffeine does for normal people is sort of what, say, Ritalin does for attention deficit disorder. It gives you a greater ability to focus your attention. So he was showing that your focus of attention and concentration is changing the randomness of the events in the experiment. As a counterbalance, he gave people alcohol and found out that they decreased their ability to cause this effect. It lowers their ability to pay attention. One of his most fascinating findings was he found that at the beginning of one of these long dice runs, say a person's going to throw 100 sets of dice, 100 times. They throw the dice, and at the very beginning, say the first 15 throws or so, their ability to change randomness of the event, to cause synchronicity, is very high. Then about 20 throws in, this ability drops off until it's just about random average. And then a little further in, they actually start to inhibit the target they were aiming for. Towards the end of the experiment, the ability comes back as strong as ever. What Ryan figured out was what was happening was, in the beginning, the person was excited. It was interesting. They wanted to see if they were going to be able to do it. Fascinating. You know, they paid attention. By about 20 tosses in, they were bored. They didn't really want to do it anymore. Their attention was drifting, and their ability to influence the randomness of the dice dropped off. Towards the end of the experiment, they became excited again. They refocused on the experiment, became interested, and their ability to change how the dice came up increased. Now, what I'm saying is that it's not just dice tosses. It's the entire universe as you're experiencing it. Reacts about 5 or 6% to what you're thinking and what you're feeling at any given moment. This is an ability that's universal. It doesn't have to be trained. It doesn't have to be well understood. It doesn't require, you know, a guru or a belief system. We're all doing this right now. Every one of us is walking around in a cloud of synchronistic events based on what we've been thinking and feeling. And one of the most amazing things about this is, since it's a direct reflection of your thoughts and your feelings, you're also seeing your belief systems about the universe reflected back at you. It does not mean that the synchronistic events are in any way true. This is one of the really bad mistakes that the New Age movements have had with synchronicity. There's been many books published that say, let synchronicity be your guide. This is the universe trying to, you know, give you information. Well, actually, no. It's just a very, very direct mirror. Now, your unconscious is, you know, very active and very alert. In fact, most of our consciousness is not the sort of daily waking consciousness that we think about. We have the majority of our processes are unconscious. The unconscious is very aware of what you're thinking and what you're looking for, and it's there to help you out. Synchronicity is generated by the unconscious aspects of you, of yourself, in the same way that your dreams are generated. And the mistake people make is, you know, you wouldn't go out and instantly follow a suggestion you saw in a dream. You would consider whether or not, you know, the dream had validity and whether or not it made sense to your life. That's why the title of this book includes the word choice. You, the part up on the frontal lobe, is the part that chooses what this all means and how you want to react to it. Synchronistic events have the same sort of communication value as dreams do. You create these events. In the same way that you're not immediately aware of constructing dreams while you're asleep, you may not be immediately aware of the process that you're using to construct the synchronistic events. But nevertheless, you are the one that's creating them, and they're mirroring what you think, what you feel, and what you believe about the environment.
Well, yeah, and I certainly agree that, you know, our thoughts can affect, I mean, the matter. I mean, I think even the medical profession is beginning to catch on with intention experiments and prayer experiments, and you have the Global Consciousness Project that's measuring, you know, consciousness and the ability to affect things. One of the most fascinating things, though, that I about your book that I'd like to talk a little bit about is that you did your own experiments on the theory that our thoughts have form, and you actually say that we can create a thought form which could be visible to our physical senses. But what's fascinating to me is that you created a thought form which actually became visible not only to you but to others. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, you know, that kind of astonishes me as well. Thought forms in Eastern philosophy are called tulpa, and they're recorded in mystical traditions in a lot of different cultures. The idea is that there's an actual energy to emotion and to thought, that they're slightly different qualities, but they're virtually inseparable, and that if you form your intent into an image, into an internal object, that you're actually in the fields around your body creating an object out of that energy. I've had a couple of instances where, you know, I've sort of just experimentally concentrated on different things and found that people can sometimes physically sense them in the area. I've had only one or two instances where something I built essentially as a toy, you know, to hang around a particular room, was accidentally seen by somebody, but that's highly unusual. I think that there's two interesting purposes for thought forms. One of them is, you know, they can be used to direct synchronistic events. If you want a particular pattern, like, for instance, you were concentrating on horses, when you did that, you actually formed a thought form around you that had that shape and that energy to it. And that sort of gravitationally affects your course and probability, leads you to environments that have those images. They're also an excellent way to sort of manage your own thought processes. So, you know, if someone says, concentrate on this or that, like, well, how do I make my thoughts do something? They're just sort of flying by. Well, if you take a thought and give it a form, you give it an image, color, feeling, and make an internal visualized object out of it, you then have a thought that you can manipulate, that you can add to the thought, you can subtract from it, you can alter it, you can play sculptor with it. It's a way of managing your own energy. It seems to be quite effective, both at producing thought forms and moving to probability with synchronicity as well. I also believe that a lot of the cases where people are investigating ghosts and haunting, what seems to be happening very often is people are running into thought forms that they themselves are generating because that's what they're looking for.
Right. So when we talk about, if we have these random thoughts, you know, mind chatter or clutter, they don't really have any effect. In other words, they don't create any synchronicities. But if we concentrate on the thought itself, on forming it, on shaping it, on repeating it, then you're saying that we'll create a synchronicity that reflects this thought?
Well, you create a pattern with your thoughts. Now, the thing is, you're moving through patterns of probability. And what happens is when you more closely align yourselves with the proper material, so to speak, the synchronistic event happens. The problem of, you know, what's out there in probability is something that, you know, I can't speak to. But I do know that the stronger the thought form you create, the more likely it is that you'll have synchronistic events in that pattern. Now, many synchronistic events are meaningless. You know, many of them are simple, direct, mere reflections of random and sometimes very fleeting thoughts. It just so happens that you have the thought at a moment where the probabilities around you or close to it. So you sort of bump over into that.
Right.
The interesting thing about thought forms, though, is that although your normal stream of consciousness, let's take an image that's given to us by mystics for a second. They report to us that there's an aura around the human body, sort of an egg-shaped energy shell. And that in that shell, there's various colors and forms and images that are coming and going in very rapid succession. That's what a clairvoyant sees when they see someone's thought. They watch this energy system, and they see the temporary thought forms that are reflections of the internal, emotional, and thought processes at any given moment. The majority of them come and go very quickly. But those that you tend to repeat, that you put more attention, energy, or emotional investment in, last longer. One of the things people do with meditation and with thought forms, in fact, the reason for doing thought forms, is that you can create forms that persist after you turn your attention elsewhere. Many people have had the experience of trying to find a particular word or a name or a fact, and they just can't figure it out, and then they let it go. And hours later, suddenly, the word pops up, as if the unconscious said, oh, here, found it, here it is. Well, right. What's happened is the brain has continued to search for the information while you turned your attention elsewhere. All those marvelous supercomputer automated systems are all actually working for us. Thought forms, also, if you create one, put some, you know, coherency into it, it'll persist after you turn your attention elsewhere. So, for instance, when you were looking for horses, if you think about looking for horses for 30 minutes and then turn your attention elsewhere, that's enough time to form the thought form that will be persistent and continue to change your course and probability and cause synchronistic events around you. Now, there's both positive and negative aspects to this. People tend to reproduce every type of experience they've had, positive and negative. So, for instance, if a child is abused or traumatized or someone suffers post-traumatic stress from, you know, from an injury, it's likely that synchronicity will give them the opportunity to reprocess that, will revisit the circumstances and the thing that's bothering them. So you tend to project what's unconscious as well as conscious. As therapists, we've seen for a long time, people with traumatic events in their lives tend to have synchronicities around them that reproduce those traumatic events. Likewise, people that have peak spiritual experiences report floods of synchronistic events of those more positive emotions as well.
Right. And I guess some people interpret that as karma. But we are talking with Dr. Kirby Surprise. He's the author of the book Synchronicity, The Art of Coincidence, Choice, and Unlocking Your Mind. We're going to go to a short break, and when we come back, we'll hear more from Dr. Kirby Surprise, so stay with us.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.kamlak.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Kirby Surprise. This show is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. We would like to welcome our newest business member, Jan Barson, owner of Equine Muscle Massage Therapy. If you're a horse lover or know someone who's interested in equine massage, call 631-862-1402. We would also like to welcome back Hugs from Heaven, a wonderful way to remember your loved ones with items made from their clothing. Visit hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs spelled with a Z. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. Here at Forever Family Foundation, we're sending our big thank you to our supportive listeners who have made possible this past year of bringing Signs of Life Radio to you. They know that even though we are a 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do. And yet, we know that not everyone has extra income they can send along to support the continuation of our programming. So this is how easy it is to keep this radio show alive without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Then, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we will receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for, and there are more than 900 online stores such as The Body Shop, Travelocity, Urban Outfitters, a portion of what you spend is, again, donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Dessert and Discarnates with certified medium Angelina Diana, an exclusive evening for only 12 attendees in one medium, and lots of gourmet desserts, coffee, and tea. This fundraiser is set for Oceanside, New York on August 10th. Go to the event page at foreverfamilyfoundation.org and click on the link for this event to reserve only one of the three remaining seats. How to Listen When Your Children Speak, an afternoon workshop for parents who have lost children from 2 to 6 p.m. in Bethel, Connecticut, with certified medium Angelina Diana, opening to bring through only 10 children in spirit. The afternoon will include evidence of an afterlife from a parent's perspective and a refreshment break with conversations from other parents who have walked in those same shoes. There are only 5 spots left at that event. Our annual November conference is set for Phoenix, Arizona at the beautiful Hilton Phoenix Airport Hotel with free shuttle service to and from the airport as well as 2 local attractions. And this conference will be the first of its kind as an intensive interactive weekend. Make your arrangements and reservations now as the hotel block is filling up. The weekend will begin with our annual Friday night fundraiser on November 9th featuring Long Island medium Teresa Caputo and will continue through November 10th and 11th with a select group of esteemed scientists answering your deepest questions about the reality of the spirit world. The weekend also features certified mediums Dave Campbell and Deborah Martin, who will be joining our panel of expert presenters, Dr. Evan Alexander, Lloyd Auerbach, Dr. Julie Bischel, Dr. Stafford Betty, and Dr. Claude Swanson. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. Kirby Surprise, the author of Synchronicity. This book is available on Amazon. You can find the Amazon link on the Forever Family Foundation website. And we left talking about certain synchronicities. In your profession, you obviously treat people who have some mental illness on occasion. So do you find sometimes that patients have been misdiagnosed and perhaps what's really happening is they're having synchronicities as opposed to having a true mental illness?
Yes, it does happen. Can I tell you the story of one client?
Sure.
I had a guy come to me, and my job is I assess and diagnose delusional and psychotic disorders. And I was referred this man who was diagnosed as paranoid schizophrenic. And I read all his charts and his medical records and did the interview with him. And I was struck by the fact that the guy did not seem schizophrenic, that, you know, he was a little depressed, you know, but, you know, he paid attention and didn't have any of the sort of, you know, other symptoms of schizophrenia about him. So I finally said, look, you know, you look a little depressed, but I don't see any psychotic symptoms. You're supposed to be paranoid schizophrenic. What's up with you? And the guy said, oh, well, you know, you wouldn't believe me. They never believe me. And at that point, I was, you know, expecting to hear sort of a paranoid schizophrenic delusional system. But what he told me was that for the past 30 years, that he had been experiencing frequent coincidences that he thought were God speaking to him, telling him that he had a special purpose in the world and, you know, directing him to go out and do things. And, you know, he said that and what had happened to him was that, you know, he started seeing this when he was in his 20s, and he ran around instantly and told all his friends that God's talking to me and, you know, has some special purpose for me. Now, the thing is, in paranoid schizophrenia, there's usually an underlying grandiose delusion. People will say they're the Messiah, you know, or that they are the chosen person in some way. This guy was not. He was saying, well, yeah, there's other people like me, and I don't really know what the purpose of this is, and it kind of ruined my life. Well, you know, he saw these synchronistic events. He was walking down the street one day, it started out, and he was thinking something, and there was a television set in the window, and the announcer said what he was thinking at the moment he was thinking it. And, you know, he guessed immediately this must be God talking to him, because, you know, who else could cause such a coincidence to happen? And he ran around and told everybody about it, and, well, you know, he lost his job pretty quick because his employer didn't want to have someone that was psychotic working for him, and he continued to chase the meanings that were happening in the world around him. People were coming up to him, asking him directions that were actually metaphorically talking to him about other things, and, you know, all kinds of coincidences happened, and his friends gradually drifted away as he became more and more upset. And eventually, you know, he wound up hospitalized. But he wasn't actually schizophrenic. So So what I told him was, look, you know, you're the one causing the synchronistic event. Okay, what you're seeing is a mirror. I said, look, some people keep pet birds in a cage. And sometimes they put a mirror in the cage with the bird to keep it company. The bird brain is not smart enough to understand what a reflection is. The bird looks at its reflection in the mirror and believes it's another bird and then begins to argue and chatter with it and have a relationship with it. That's what's happening with the synchronistic event. What you've done is you've looked into the environment and the explanation you came up with is God must be talking to me, and then that thought was reflected back to you. The synchronistic events immediately formatted themselves into God talking to you. Now, of course, at this point, he thought I was crazy.
Right.
So I told him, look, go back to your room, watch TV the way you used to, because he used to talk to the television, he used to talk back to him. And I said, instead of listening to God giving you instructions, listen for Walt Disney. Listen for Bugs Bunny. He came back for his next session and said, oh my God, I've been talking to myself for 30 years. He realized that his thoughts were powerful enough so that no matter what pattern he assumed synchronistic events would take, if that's the pattern he looked for, that's the pattern that appeared. And it's pretty much this way with all of us. Now, in true forms of mental illness, in true delusion, you cannot dissuade the person from their belief. Guy comes into my office and says, Doc, I have duck's feet. I look at him and go, but you're wearing Nike. No, I have duck's feet. Okay, well, take off your shoes. Those are people's feet. No, I have duck's feet. You know, no matter what proof you give somebody, they're not going to believe it.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases in synchronicity, though, what happens is people may have some tinge of mental illness, which sort of puts them outside the normal way people in our society are taught to think about cause and effect. And then they see some of these coincidences, and the only explanation they have is either a religious explanation or a paranoid government conspiracy explanation or, you know, hyperspatial aliens, whatever it is they come up with. That pattern then mirrors back to them, and they mistake the resulting synchronistic event as a confirmation of what they thought, when in fact they're coming to believe something just because they think it. It's
right.
Not necessarily a symptom.
Yeah. Well, I want to make sure we don't run out of time. We're approaching the end. But one of the major thrusts of the book is you obviously believe that we all can use synchronicity as we navigate our physical lives. So what advice would you give people? How could we use synchronicity as a tool in our daily lives?
Look for patterns that you actually want to appear. So there's a lot of people that attend workshops about how to get unblocked. You know, what's preventing me from doing this or that? Well, that causes synchronistic events about what's preventing you from doing something. Synchronistic events alter the environment in your favor as if you're hunting. We're essentially grassland hunters. Okay, if you want something to appear, look for the pattern that you actually want, not what you're afraid of, not what you're trying to avoid, and not what the problems are that are preventing you from accomplishing anything. Create an image in your mind, a thought form, of the patterns that you want to appear around you, and then look to your environment to see those patterns appear, and they will gradually synchronistically. You'll be presented with events that bear those patterns.
That sounds like sound advice to me. If you want to learn about the art of coincidence, about the choices you make, and how to unlock your mind, the Synchronicity is the name of the book. You can find the link, as I mentioned, on an Amazon link on our website. Dr. Surprise's last name is spelled just the way you would think, S-U-R, P-R-I-S-E. Are there any other contact information for you, Dr. Surprise? Or?
Well, there is a website,
howsynchronicityworks.com. Okay.
There's some information on it, some plugs for the book, and a forum where people are leaving their synchronistic events. And I try to respond to people who ask questions on the website.
And that, again, is howsynchronicityworks.com. Dr. Surprise, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and we hope that you'll come back again.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Stanley Mullen, Julie B., Chase McKenna, Elizabeth McKenna, Glenna Irwin, Doreen Malloy, Barbara Petillo, Pat Longo, David Haith, Rita Springer, CJ, Lynn LeClaire, Joanne Gerber, Eileen LaFada, Mark Barron, Wendy Lippo, Vicki Steffi, and Nancy Scheel. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Earth's waters, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. Taken from the original Gulf Water Prayer by Masuro Omota back on May 9th, 2010. And now it's time to say...
Our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.